This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Back of the Nest. Match Review Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Welcome, listeners, one and all. I am Chris Hambling, and I'm your host for the Back of the Nest Review Show. We'll be taking a look at some key Palace topics, a frankly bizarre mauling of Leicester City, and be going through a selection of your questions. I won't be doing it alone, though. My panel tonight is Mike Scott, DR Kerners, and Patrick O'Connor. We'll be back with you after this short break.
Back of the Nest, Match Preview Podcast.
Hello, listeners. Terence from the Preview Podcast here. We will be in your ears from Thursday night, and we will be reviewing that game against Manchester United from Wednesday. And we'll be previewing our trip to Turf Moor, where we will face Sean Dyche's Burnley on Saturday. Join me, Albert, and Sam Hesketh.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, it is time to talk to that panel. And I have to start with DR Kerners. Hi, DR.
Hello, but why do you have to start with me?
Well, I believe we've got an interesting story about your dad this week.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was, I don't know, I found it interesting anyways. I find it confusing on the day, but looking back at it now, it was, I don't want to swear, but weird as, you know what I mean. Yeah, so basically, yesterday, I was at the shop, and it was a quiet day, and then all of a sudden, it just managed to get busy, but my dad went out because it was quiet. And then I called him. I told him to come back to the shop. He was busy. Half an hour later, he's still not at the shop. I call him back and he doesn't answer. And then he ends up calling me back and he's like, told the police if they come to the shop, the guy ran away. I'm like, what is going on? What I said, come back to the shop. I didn't say, what are you on about with the police? I was so confused. I thought he got into a fight anyways. Like, what's going on? Yeah, he said to come back. And I was like, all right. So police arrive at the shop. I'm serving a customer and I'm so confused. There's like a bunch of police officers and they're like, what's going on? And I look at them, I'm saying, what's going on? Like, we're just both baffled, like, with each other. We don't know what's going on. Anyways, my dad comes to the shop 2 minutes later and we find out that someone actually pranked him and said that there was a massive fight at the shop and my dad saw a police car. So he took over a police car, stopped the police car, told them to send everyone to the shop because there's a massive fight. So a bunch of police officers arrived. A customer nearly shat his pants because they didn't know what's going on. And yeah, it was just all a mess.
So who was it who told him there was a massive fight?
No one knows. But they knew that my dad wasn't at the shop. But it's just weird. It must have been one of his friends because he said, you're not at the shop. I can tell that because there's a massive fight. My dad just fell for that and he took over a police car, just skid in front of him and just stopped it. But yeah, the worst thing, there's a customer that I was serving and he just came to the country and moved to the area and 4 police officers arrived and I was explaining how I thought my dad got into a fight. And I looked at the customer, he's like, please tell me it's not like this every week. I was like, don't worry, it's not. Like, the customer nearly shat his pants and left the shop. So
What a life you lead.
Exactly. Such a peaceful day. Palace won. It was such a peaceful day. It wasn't that busy, but, you know, it wasn't quiet as well. And then 2 police cars, 4 police officers, a customer that nearly shat his pants. I need to stop saying that word.
You've said it 3 times now. I'm just going to say, if that was a listener, very funny, but
Please don't do that again. And I think obviously that might be red rag to a bull, and you might now get a weekly wind up from people in your shop.
But no. It was that we won't, because it wasn't someone who called the shop. It was someone who called my dad's personal number, and I don't think listeners know my dad's personal number unless
they
do. Well,
you'll be surprised. They're a devious bunch. I think we're going to leave DR well alone there. Mike Scott, you are also here. Hello.
You don't get that kind of hustle in Morley's, do you?
Exactly right. The most angry people get is if the wings aren't quite fresh enough, and that's about it.
Yeah, which they aren't. In comparison, I've had a much quieter weekend. A few first world problems, I guess. Obviously, first of all, I had a ticket for Leicester away, and then my babysitter fell through, so I ended up watching it on the TV. That was a bit sad. Secondly, one of my kids, I'm not going to say which one, I'm not going to name and shame, has decided they're too lazy to go to the toilet when they need a piss in the night. So they've started pissing on their floor. So that's quite annoying. And thirdly, my local shop has decided they're going to discontinue Holston cans and replace them with Holston bottles. I was already annoyed they went from £1 to £1.10. It's now £1.39 for a little 330ml bottle. They have lost my custom.
That is horrendous news. But on the pee incident there, I once, one of my housemates, and I am going to name and shame him. His name's Paul Flannery. He's an actor. You might he's done a couple of films. And he's also quite well known as the guy who started Nightmare Live, which is a live stage show version of the kids' TV show Nightmare. Nice. He also does the MMORPG stage show as well. So, he's out there. You'll find him. And this is the story I'm going to tell about him. When I house shared with him a few years back, he went through a phase of getting so drunk that he was unable to comprehend what a toilet was. And I happened to go downstairs in the middle of the night once to our lounge where he'd sort of passed out. And I witnessed watching him stand up, walk from our lounge into the sort of dining room, and there was a sort of sliding canvas type door between the two. He pulled that shut and took his trousers down and started to urinate on the floor. And when I asked him what he was doing, he said, "Get out, I'm already in here." Good stuff.
Wow. I that would lead you amazingly on to the photo that we're going to discuss in a minute, I guess.
It really will, don't you?
Yeah. The one good thing, bodily function-wise, is these tablets I'm taking to deal with my dire back. I can now take them and drink without puking into Tesco bags. So that's the one good thing that's come from this weekend.
Fantastic stuff. Well, Patrick, you're last and you've got a lot to live up to. How you been?
I've been great. A couple of things. I want to just say I'm so glad I have two kids that are 23 and 26. I'm not going through Mike's problems. And I had a roommate a long time ago and he didn't do anything close to what your roommate did. So I'm actually doing very well. I want to appreciate that right now.
See, that's the difference between people from South London and people from the other side of like the UK. We don't have roommates who piss on the floor. Like we're all right in that side. We're all mature. I don't know about you guys, but see, it's just weird. There's no and nothing like that happens there.
Except your dad's mates who just wind him up by telling him.
Yeah, that's different.
And waste police time. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, but they don't piss on the floor in a house.
you don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. You can't prove that. Anyway, let's not get look. I admit Crawley is the Badlands, right? those are the sorts of things that happen. Anyway, great to hear from you all, but let's get into discussion of that picture. If you are listening at home, if you're listening on Acast, you'll be able to see the photos pop up on the screen right now. If you're not listening on Acast, you'll still be able to find those pictures on our Twitter feed and probably on Instagram as well, I suspect. But you might well have seen it anyway. That picture is of James Tompkins looking down Vincente Guaita's shorts. And we had a little bit of a caption competition, as did a few other people. And I'm going to go through a few of my favourites, I think. But first of all, kind of sort of address what actually seemed to be happening. DR mentioned it when we were doing our pre-show chat, and it seems to have been that it's the sort of the tie of the shorts, which obviously Vicente Guaita can't tie himself whilst wearing goalkeeper gloves. However, you know, the pictures captured it pretty well in a position where it looks deeply, deeply suspicious. And I've got to say this. I have no idea how many of our listeners seem to be either extras or actors in Carry On films by the looks of things. It's a ridiculous set of comments. And there's some great ones there. So I'm going to start with the irrepressible Mummy White, who's gone with, "It's true, it's red and blue," which I quite like. Chewy, who you'll be hearing from later on, has gone with, "That's quite a big boy you've got there, but it doesn't compare to Sacco Soldier." You see what I mean about the Carry On stuff? It's ridiculous. The legendary Steve Brookstein has gone with, "I thought Vardy was in your pocket," which I also enjoyed.
Nice.
Nav has gone with, "No wonder you're better at handling them, Wayne."
My favourite.
Mark Skeens went with, "I know Roy said he was worried about your ball distribution, but they seem to be in the right place to me," which is an excellent effort. Lewis Cawthrey just went with the one word, "Winkle." I don't know why that made me laugh. It's nothing clever. There's nothing clever about it. It's
how
just,
did that make the cut?
It just said "Winkle." It made me giggle earlier on when I looked. It was one of the first things I looked at on the social feed this morning. So I probably blame my tiredness. Paul went with, "Nah, Brighton are further down than that," which any mention of Brighton quite entertains me. "It's been brought to my attention that, frozen in a moment by a camera, that this looks like I'm making a completely inappropriate type of salute. I can assure everyone I would never, ever do that, and any resemblance to that kind of gesture is absolutely coincidental."
That is so good. Dear. So, so good.
He's played a blinder there, as Chris. I very much enjoyed that one. We want to take a moment, actually, to talk about the first game in the US for a former Palace manager, Frank de Boer, Mike. So it was something you wanted to chat about. Didn't start too well, did he?
Well, we couldn't go through this pod without talking about this. Frank de Boer taking over Atlanta United. And for those that know a little bit about the MLS, they did exceptionally well last season, and they're the people that just sold Almiron over to Newcastle, and Almiron was probably the best player last season in the MLS. I'm just going to quote from DirtySouthSoccer.com about the game. He lost his first game in the CONCACAF Champions League to Herediano 3-1. "In Atlanta United's first CONCACAF Champions League game in club history, and the first game of Frank de Boer's tenure, things went very, very poorly." I think that's all we need to say on that. Apparently the defence was absolutely abysmal. They lost 3-1. They're probably out already. They couldn't defend to save their lives, and that just about sums up everything about Frank de Boer, I think.
I read some of the detail on that as well. And unsurprisingly, he went with a 3-4-3 formation and tried to force the team to play out from the back. But selecting players that people thought were out of position, were too young or too inexperienced, leaving better players on the bench for no apparent reason. And I dare say he was probably trying to convert their best midfielder to a centre-back or something like that. Absolutely baffling. What do you make of it, Patrick?
I will say, as a New York Red Bulls fan, I'm thrilled he's over here because last year they beat the Red Bulls in the semi-finals over in the playoffs, and they actually won the MLS Cup. So they are the best team in the league. Losing Almiron is going to hurt them, but having Frank de Boer is going to hurt them a lot more. And they're going to suffer this year, and I'm looking forward to watching it.
Is the MLS still frantic? Like, when I watched it like 5 years ago, there was no like defense at all. It was just teams just attacking, I remember. And it was just crazy. Is it still like that, or is it more tactical now?
It's a great question. It's a bit more tactical, DR. Again, I would say it's, the level is about mid-championship level. So, whether, you know, teams like, you know, the mid-championship. But, you know, they've got players over here like Rooney to come over here. But there are some players that can play. Mike had mentioned in the previous part about Giovinco, who's now left and gone, I think, somewhere in the Far East to play. He's probably the best player in the league. And again, Almiron, you watch that kid play. You're going to watch him. You're going to be surprised. He's a very good player. And they've got another player on their side, and Lance is even better than him, a striker. So the quality is getting a lot better. It is a little frantic, but it's, you know, as an American, you know, American voices love frantic play, so it's fun to watch. So, and my nephew's playing in the league this year. I'm really excited about that. He's a DC United fullback this year, so it's going to be really fun this year for me anyway.
The signing of Almiron from Newcastle looks a very, very good player in the little bit I saw of him yesterday. So pretty impressive. But I wonder how long De Boer's going to last. I don't know if he's going to break his record of 42 days at Inter, not much longer for us. Seems a very odd way to go about things. I think I do wonder if you just sort of let him play, you know, to get the right players in the system that he wants to play, whether or not he'd actually be successful. But I think it shows. Personally, I think if you look at the teams he played for and the teams, you know, the success he had with Ajax, it's all based on, you know, teams that have played a certain way and had players a certain quality. It's almost like he doesn't understand that not everyone's going to be up to that level and be able to play the system. You have to adapt to the players that you have available, and that seems to be his fault. But
be honest with you, the owner of the Atlanta United is also the owner of the Falcons football team. He's not going to fire him. He's just not the owner's very rich billionaire. He's not going to fire him. So what's going to happen at Hamburg? He's going to have a chance to bring in the players he wants to play. And again, because the league isn't the top league in America, no one really cares about the MLS as much. So he'll be able to play around and do whatever. He'll be fine for, I would say, at least for the next 2 years over here, if he gets a better job in Europe somewhere.
Yeah, just last bit. I'm surprised that Pardew isn't there yet. I really am. Like, what are you doing? Exactly. But it hasn't happened yet. I'm just surprised. I just had to, like, it just came to my head. I'm like, what is he doing?
He's got a cushy job on BN Sports over in the Far East.
Oh, he can go to the Far
going
West.
Anywhere.
I can see him in LA. I can see him there.
Imagine he already sees himself there. But anyway, right. So, you know, talking managers, I suppose we have to cover the fact that as a result of Palace's 4-1 victory, Claude Puel got the boot on a Sunday, of all things. It doesn't usually happen that quick. But, from my perspective, you could see that, you know, particularly looking at the way Leicester crumbled, they clearly aren't playing for that manager. He doesn't come across as a particularly inspiring manager anyway. But he's, you know, you can look at, there's a lot of parallels to other managers where they go into teams, they try and change the system, they try and play a certain way, and it, you know, with the players that they have that have been used to playing another way, you know, we've seen it at Palace, it just doesn't work unless you get the opportunity to change those players, and he hasn't really been able to do that quick enough. You know, the likes of Vardy have publicly come out and said they don't like playing for him in the system that he plays. You know, Peter Schmeichel was talking about Kasper Schmeichel wanting to leave on TV not too long ago. It really does sound like a mess there, and he's borne the brunt of that. I don't know how you gents feel about that. And Mike, again, it's a topic you brought to the table. Can he feel hard done by, or is it, you know, Leicester probably not quite as good as they maybe think they are?
Well, yeah, no, I agree. I don't think they are. I mean, you look at their squad and you certainly look at them yesterday, and I don't think they've particularly got a better squad than we have. Certainly, I don't think they've got a better starting 11 than we have. So, you know, they're 2 points above us. I don't know what more they expect. The thing is, the problem is that they won the league, and so their expectations are way higher. But, you know, they said he plays fairly boring football. I thought he played quite attacking football, and that's pretty much why we managed to hit him on the break the last 4 times we've played him. You know, he's not been responsible for all of those. But if he played boring defensive football, I think we'd have had a lot more trouble scoring against them. So I think it's more his personality. You know, he's quite dull after press conferences and that kind of thing, and it seems to be that people don't particularly like him, but I don't think he's done that bad a job, and I think he's pretty unlucky. I assume he's getting a big old payoff, so he'll be all right. But it's quite surprising, really.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I actually rate him as a manager. I thought he did a great job at Southampton. He got him to the League Cup, and barring a couple of decisions by the referee, they could have won that League Cup. And I thought he did a decent job at Leicester. Again, I just think, as Mike said, they just got a big heads all of a sudden. They won the Premier League. It was a one-off. It was a great story. And now they think they're owed something. It's really strange how they got a little Ranieri, and then they've just been firing manager after, like, I think they said it's the second time or third time in a row they fired manager after losing, whatever, not winning this in 6 games or something like that. It's, to me, again, I just think Leicester fans are just a little bit too high on their horse. They should be very happy they won it couple of years back and just be thankful. And again, I don't think their style of play is that bad. I did hear the Vardy comments. I know that Peter Schmeichel said the comment, but Kasper took him back yesterday and said he didn't say that. But they've got some good young players there. He was developing, you know, Gray and Barnes and Madison. I thought they played a decent style of football. I just think the fans, again, you know how it works. When the fans turn against you, it's over. I saw that happen with Holloway here and other managers with Pardew. It doesn't work if they turn, and they turned on him, and that was it for him.
It's interesting. I was reading the Leicester City forums yesterday, which I always do after we beat a team, particularly if we beat them heavily, because it's not so much fun. I'm genuinely up till 2:30 in the morning reading them, laughing my head off. But what really did strike me was how familiar those comments were to us earlier in the season. Lots of players being sort of taken to task. They were calling, you know, saying Madison's rubbish and overrated. They were saying, you know, Barnes was their only good player. Gray's a waste of time. You know, really laying into to Harry Maguire, which on that performance, understandable. But generally speaking, the players were taking as much of a pasting as Puel. But it was really noticeable that they were talking about the manager playing, you know, being set in his ways, playing with the system, not, you know, being resistant to change, all these things. I'm thinking, hold on a second, I've heard all this before. And it's probably fair to say that if you know, most of the teams probably sort of maybe even up seventh in the table down, you kind of get that exact same discussion happening. You know, you kind of get into your own little bubble as a club, and you sort of don't look at other teams. You look at your own situation and you get really sort of caught up in it, if you know what I mean. And I think sometimes it's good to actually take a look at how other fans are reacting and realise that you're all in the same boat. I mean, you look at Leicester, they're 2 points ahead of us. They had a pretty good start to the season. And yeah, they're in terrible form now, but you know, ultimately they are in the table than we are. So you kind of think, well, how could you be that angry? And how could you be sacking your manager when you're in that position? Because you're not that good. But, you know, the job, as we're kind of indicating here, has become a little bit of a poison chalice over the last few years since, you know, Ranieri did what he did and then got sacked. And it was definitely, in my view, a really hasty decision to sack Ranieri. I think if they'd just kept with him, I think they'd be in a much better place now. But hey, this isn't a Leicester podcast, but I think there's lessons to learn there. So last little bit on that, Patrick.
Yeah, ironically, Fulham fans hate Ranieri now.
Yeah,
so you're absolutely right. It's just the managing football is so difficult, and it depends on the situation. You make a great point about, you know, a couple of years ago, they were doing great and they were probably hasty. But again, now fans, I mean, I don't understand. Fans really, really, we are very fickle.
There are 99 reasons to hate Brighton. Homophobia doesn't need to be one of them. Follow us on Twitter at Proud and Palace.
And now it's the return of Forward Review, starting with Mr. D.R. Kernan.
Gary Milton, tactics were spot on.
Palace Ash, who said drop Mako?
Carl Savage, not pretty, but deserved.
Pete Mouser, totally shocked, but boom!
Paul O'Hara, sit back, counter-attack.
Rod Adams, a good professional performance.
Ben Agmamani, moving up the table.
And finally, we got one directly from, well, indirectly, from Wilfred Zaha via the official CPFC account.
Man's out here working.
I love that one. Absolutely love that one. Man's out here working.
Man's out here working.
Wilf wins.
Wilf does win.
He wins. Yep.
Undoubtedly. And if that's not enough, there was also a wonderful reaction from a certain Leicester fan.
Fucking scored! They've scored! Fuck's sake! 1-0 to Crystal Palace. There we go.
Johnny Evans, that's a great finish. Sacco's even up there.
Where's
him down?
No,
don't. He's done
ya.
He's done
ya
towards Zaha.
And he's 2-1. I hate him. I fucking hate Zaha as well. Look at him. I can't believe what is going on at Leicester City Football Club. I can't believe it. It's a penalty to balance. First of all, we get rolled by Jeff Schluck.
He puts it into the box and he goes over on whatever, and it's a penalty. Oh, I can't deal with it. Here we go. Come on, Casper. Three, two. Come on, Casper. Quarton, save it. No. Shit. And he has. It's 4-1 to Crystal Palace. And the fucking...
there's so much in that.
You just get some mental breakdown as it goes on, and you get worse and worse.
As I'm sure many of you have picked up, you've seen that video on social media and what have you. It's the second one where Zaha scores, because he celebrates. he smiles and clenches his fist, and then immediately changes into saying how much he hates Zaha. But very, very odd young man, but incredibly compelling and entertaining.
I want to say, you mentioned Chris by going on social media outlets. I always go on a club's website, or in this case, YouTube, if we've won a game. So the most entertaining ones are always Arsenal AFTV, now I call it, West Ham TV, which I told you about a couple of weeks ago. And then, of course, this kid last night. I'm telling you, some of the reactions when they do these live things are just brilliant. And that one is the best I've ever seen in my entire life. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And, well, you know, there you go. That's what happens in the crowd at times. But like I say, I'm very, very confused by his reaction to Zaha's second goal. But so first up, we're going to talk about Roy. Roy has set the record for being the oldest manager in Premier League history. Just jumping ahead of the legendary Bobby Robson and a little bit ahead of Sir Alex Ferguson on both their last managerial stints in the Premier League. And it's kind of fitting, you know, the reaction that he got. A lot of attention pre-game, got a lot of questions about it and answered them all with good humour, and, you know, seems to have no intention of slowing down at the moment, clearly still enjoying it. And, you know, I think, what I really liked was the reaction of the players after the game. You know, you had Luca talking in glowing terms about Roy, and Wilf dedicating his goal, one of his goals, to Roy on Instagram as well. And just, I suppose we'll talk about how much sort of frustration we've all had throughout the course of this season. You know, regular listeners will know. I think all of us at times have questioned Roy and his methods, but it's funny how results do change that and make it a lot easier to cope with. And I think it's just, what's really pleasing is to see that the players clearly love working with Roy. And I doubted that earlier in the season. I'm hanging myself out to dry a little bit. I think it was the Southampton game that I watched the way we played, not the draw, the defeat at Selhurst. And I was just convinced that the players had just lost faith with his methods. And I heard all sorts of things about, you know, stuff behind the scenes where people, you know, players were questioning the system and all that sort of stuff. And you never know how much is true about what gets talked about. But it's pretty clear that whatever happened at the start of the season, now everybody is on the same page, and there's a lot of trust and a lot of belief in Roy. And the players clearly love and respect him, and just, like I say, love working with him.
I think it speaks volumes that the oldest managers that he's overtaken is Alex Ferguson and Bobby Robson. They're both Sirs, I think, aren't they? And so obviously what he does has transcended the eras that he's worked in. And yeah, I'm sure there's been times where he's been questioned in most of his jobs, but he's come through it. And at no point at that time did anyone really think he was going to get the sack. You know, we thought maybe we were going to underachieve. But the people that have been calling for his head were definitely in the minority. I'm really happy for him. And interesting fact, after those three gentlemen that we've just talked about, the next person, the next oldest manager, is Neil Warnock. So we have two of the four oldest Premier League managers, which is, yeah, that's quite a stat to have, I reckon.
And just to jump in, I just want to say, I think it's okay to be critical of Roy without being abusive. I think, you know, one of the great things about being a football supporter is the ability to criticize and talk about football. Now, I've come to the point now where I understand where Hodgson's coming from as far as a manager. He's an excellent man manager. You can tell that. He wouldn't have got an England job if he wasn't a man manager. That's really what it's more, mostly about, because you've got players that are very talented to play for England. So obviously, that's not a problem. But you just have to manage the players and get them, you know, to perform for England. As far as for Palace, I just think that, like I said, he's very old school, so he's very loyal. You can just tell the way he treats, for instance, a perfect example, a Jeffrey Schlupp player or James McArthur. He's not going to put them on the bench now because he believes in them. And the truth of the matter is he believes in them, and they have come through and they have performed. And that is to Hodgson's credit. Now, my issue is the biggest one I have. I get why he doesn't play Maia, because he has players ahead of him that are better. I think if Maia, you know, at some point gets to play, things will be work out. But like I said, I just kind of understand that he's very old school in his techniques. And again, as Mike and Hambo just mentioned, the plaudits he got, Luca and Wolf both dedicated goals to him. They obviously really, really like him as a manager. And I think that's part of the reason we've done so in the last 6 or 7 matches. And I think, you know, again, to criticize him is okay, as long as you're not abusive. And I think he's done a really good job, again, from the standpoint of, you know, getting our players to perform. I think the squad, honestly, Hambo and I have mentioned it before, I think our squad has always been decent. Now you're seeing it. You're seeing guys like Dan come through and Kelly come through, and other players stepped up and done really well. Brought in Batshuayi, he's done well. And I think, you know, just seeing that, you see that we've got so much potential. I think that's what fans really want to see, is that our squad do well, and we have been doing well, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing with Roy, is the fact that if you look at our squad, we've actually got good players and we should be higher up in the table rather than fighting in a relegation battle. However, if you actually look at even last week, before the Leicester game, when we were 3 points above the relegation zone, there's not much of a fear of us going down, because we know that Roy can get us a result, whether that's a point or a win. He can get us them results when we need them. So there's not that much of a worry going down. But it's the fact that sometimes when we're drawing games, he's happy with the draw rather than pushing on and being more adventurous and trying to get a win. And that asks the question, what if we were more adventurous this season? That's my real, I wouldn't say problem, it's just my thought with Roy. It's just, if he allowed that freedom, then we might right now be seventh, or, you know, we might be more open because we're playing adventurous and be in a bottom three. So you don't know, but that's the what if. What if we played with a bit more freedom? That's my only little criticism.
You're absolutely right, Dio. And it's a really good point that you bring up, because it's exactly where I have that concern, and where it came to a head earlier in the season. And I was talking on this show about how, you know, something has to change, and I didn't believe that Roy was capable of it. So, you know, I was kind of just asking the question, does that mean that the manager has to change? And, you know, I think we're right to be able to have that discussion. But as I said at the time, I'd be delighted if that problem went away, and I feel that it has. But, the Leicester game was a kind of perfect microcosm, if you like, of what we're talking about, because first half was poor, really poor. And you were looking at that and you were thinking, God, dear, I wish, you know, either Schlupp or McArthur wasn't playing and Max Meyer was, because he would be in that massive, huge sort of circular space between Batshuayi and the central midfield. And you'd have that link-up play between, you know, Townsend and Zaha would have other options rather than either trying to take someone on or knock it back to a fullback. And that's where the frustration comes from. And again, something that Patrick was saying, it's about the squad. You're looking at it, and like you say, Dale, we could be more, we could be higher up the table if we were more adventurous. But you're spot on. How do we know? It's that you can't say that just because if we attack more, we'll definitely score more goals and we'll definitely win more games. But you can understand us as fans saying that, because, you know, again, watch that first half and it was wrong. We were set up wrong. There were mistakes. So you would have every right to question the manager at that point. I was on Love Sport after the game talking about it, and I said, you know, Roy keeps making us look stupid as supporters, because we all rant about the team selection pre-game and we start moaning about the first half. We end up winning the game 4-1, and just like, oh, Roy was right. I got a response to that from Stuart Shave, I think he was, saying it's almost as if Roy's 40 years in the game means he knows more. And I totally get that. I think we've said similar on the show before. Of course, Roy knows more than we do about his players. But one thing I would say to that is it doesn't invalidate a football supporter's opinion. You know, I'd say probably the majority of regular Palace fans have, for example, seen more games Wilfred Zaha has played than Roy Hodgson has. And we're entitled to make our judgments on what we see. And it doesn't, just because we aren't football managers, it doesn't mean our opinions are invalid and we can't question what we're seeing. But at the same time, you know, Roy knows his onions, as the phrase goes, because we are getting results. And that's one thing I would definitely say about Roy, is that if we need a result, of all the managers we've had in recent times, he's the one I would say will pretty much guarantee us it.
Even more than that, you back his defensive tactics in a way that you haven't backed, well, I assume you haven't backed a lot of our recent managers. You know, let's take the Doncaster match. 2-0. At no point did it look like we were going to concede. And it was a bit of a banana skin of a game. But if there's any manager that could manage that kind of game, it's Roy Hodgson. And that's what we've needed for a while. You know, some kind of stability, especially at the back. So I think right now, I wouldn't want to swap him for anyone, I don't think.
No, which is, I have to say, for me, it's been a significant turnaround. You know, I'm being honest. I did lose faith, and I don't know if I feel embarrassed about it. I think there were obvious reasons for it, and I think I'm probably far from the only one. But I'm so happy to be proved wrong, and long may that continue.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, second thing I want us to get into today. The discussion over the centre-back pairing of Sakho and Tompkins. Obviously, Sakho went off injured during the game, and hopefully that's not too bad. But there's a lot of talk about whether or not it's our best ever centre-back pairing. I suppose a lot of it depends on how long you've been following Palace and how you kind of deal with the mists of time and the effect of nostalgia and all that kind of stuff. You know, first of all, from my perspective, I've got to say, Sakho is a fantastic player. And because of that that tendency to have a little bit of a moment in a game, which, let's face it, has been a lot less this season. And he's played a lot more football this season than he had previously. I think he still gets underrated, even though people like him and respect him and think he's a great player. I think he's even better than most people give him credit for. So that, I'll say that about Sakho. Tompkins is a very effective defender, really good on the ball. And I think the combination just works brilliantly. You know, Tompkins is very comfortable as right-sided. Sakho very comfortable as left-sided. There's no conflict there. They don't get across each other very much. They cover each other really well. And the fact that both are comfortable on the ball make them really, really good for the modern game. You know, I go back to Young and Thorne, really, as the two centre-backs I was most impressed with when I first started watching Palace. And they were just so dominant and again, were better on the ball than people gave them credit for. But they were terrifying as a centre-back partnership. And I can't think, in between, I don't think there's anything that matches. So for me, those two pairings are right up there, and I'd be hard-pushed to pick between them.
Yeah, and I go way, way, way back. Unfortunately, I've been watching Palace since the early 70s. So I grew up watching, I've mentioned it before, you know, the old team of the 80s. So I remember the pairing of Jim Cannon and Billy Gilbert. And for people who remember them, Gilbert came through the academy. Jim Cannon came through as a youth player, scored his first goal, I think, 74 against Chelsea as like a 17-year-old. Great defensive partnership, but the game's evolved in that 40-plus years since then. I mean, Gilbert and Cannon were old school, good in the air, great in the tackle, get up from a corner and score a goal, but they couldn't play football like these two. And going to Sacco and Tompkins, Sacco first, he amazes me in the way he can play football. Perfect example is the goal that Wilf scored. He takes the ball out of defense and just keeps going and going, plays the ball out wide. It's just amazing his ability to actually play football as a center half. And I know that people get on his case for his overplaying, but you got to understand the modern game has totally changed. You don't kick the ball into row Z anymore. You just don't. I mean, I'd like to see him do it once in a while, but that's not how you play. If you watch any modern football team, the top teams, Man City, Chelsea, they all play out the back. Sacco is perfect for that. Tompkins, as a compliment, is brilliant. What I like about him most, besides the picture of him and Guaita yesterday, is just the way that he shepherds a player like Wan-Bissaka and helps him and helps develop him as a player. We've got a steal in Tompkins. And then you look at Kelly, just signed a new contract, has been brilliant as a backup. I've underrated him for a long time, I'm not going to lie. I think his role under Pardew hurt him because he's playing in a position he wasn't familiar with. That really hurt him a lot. And then I have always been a huge Scott Dan fan, another player who's a great footballer and a great leader. So I think as far as centre-halves, we have the best four we've ever, ever had. And I think, that has been one of the reasons why, again, I go back to giving Roy kudos, is that the reason why we're so good as a team is that we are so solid defensively with those two in the middle or those four, whichever two play. You had PVA and Wan-Bissaka. I think that defense is so good. And I think that's the reason why we're off to such a solid base. And like DR said before, I think we should be further at the table. And I think our defense can take us further at the table, hopefully, this season.
Yeah, spot on, really. Absolutely spot on. From a man that sort of became a Palace fan in the early 2000s. I mean, I can't compare, I can't think about young, I'm talking about like Greg Berhalter and stuff like that. So, slightly different set of circumstances. But if you look back to 2013, I think, if I remember rightly, our first game in the Premier League was against Spurs. So I've just looked that up. I'm sure it was a 1-0 loss at Spurs, from what I remember. And our back four was Joel Ward, Danny Gabbadon, Damo and Dean Moxey. So you're talking about straight ahead, absolutely straight ahead. We've got four decent centre-backs, any of which I would say I'd be happy with in the first 11. The one thing I would say, if you're literally going to split hairs, and I'm just saying this to be a bit of a bastard, Scott Dan is a threat for headers in the box when we've got corners, that kind of thing. Sacco seems to be able to miss the goal regardless of how close he is to it. Tompkins, he scores the odd header, but he hasn't been that prolific this season. So I think maybe the one thing they're missing is, considering they're lanky guys, maybe a bit of aerial threat at the front. But, you wouldn't swap them for anyone we've ever had, or certainly anyone I ever remember. You just feel confident with them, with Guaita behind them. I've never felt more confident than I do right now. So absolutely spot on. You've got to say they probably are our best centre-back partnership.
In terms of Sacco and Tompkins missing headers, I think overall we've been poor from corners all season long. Yes, they've missed some obvious chances. I'm not saying that they haven't, but we've just been poor from corners overall. But from my era, like even when we got promoted to the Premier League, I was 13, so I'm still young. But it shows like Tompkins and Sacco is the best partnership individually. But what makes them so good and makes us good as a team is the fact that they've been coached well. If they wasn't coached well, yes, they've got a talent there, but if Roy didn't sort out the midfield and the rest of the team to defend as a team, I feel like they would have struggled a bit more. But Roy has solidified the team, which makes them good as well.
That's a good point. It isn't just about the good defence, comes from, like you say, defending as a team. So that's a really good point you make there, DR. I don't want to give some honourable mentions to some centre-backs as individuals in terms of talent. Craig Moore was one that was just superb for us in a very short spell. I think our season in the Premier League under Dowie, where we had Gonzalo Sorondo, he was a Rolls-Royce of a centre-back, if you like. But I'm sure there's probably a few more. Popovic, was a little bit of a sort of cult hero, really. But But, you know, again, you look again. I suppose Damien Delaney was outstanding for quite a period in some, you know, pretty impressive circumstances as well. So we've had some great centre backs. But, you know, as a pairing, like I say, I can only think of Young and Thorne that come close. And, you know, again, I wouldn't want to say either way. But as Patrick quite rightly pointed out, the game has changed. I think maybe Young and Thorne these days would perhaps not be up to the standard that Sacco and Tompkins reached. So it's a great conversation to be able to have, really. And yeah, like we say, it's hopefully going to drive us further up the table. Final point I would like to discuss before we get into some of the detail of the match. It's been raised that to credit, well, Steve Parish for sorting out the HF situation, as the fan support has massively improved. That's the statement being made here. I do want to mention, of course, that it's credit to everybody who is involved in that discussion and that, you know, resolving that situation. It was very uncomfortable, and I think it's no coincidence that the team seems to have improved and the togetherness in the stands has improved and all that kind of stuff. It's been brilliant, the couple of matches that I've joined in with the singing section in the cup. It's just a completely different experience being able to comfortably and positively support your team for 90 minutes. It's, you know, and I love the fact that we wound people up the other week when we beat Doncaster as well, because, you know, having in the midweek people praising the sort of ultra support from across the continent to then start allowing into the Palace support for doing it, well, you know, it's funny. It's funny to annoy them. But, you know, personally, I think it's made a huge difference. And yes, you have to credit the club for recognising that. And I know a lot of criticism was flying about on both sides of it for how it all came about. But it definitely looks like we're making strides in that and moving in the right direction.
Something had to be done. I know the atmosphere was regressing as the years go by, and it's normal in the Premier League because more tourists start coming into your stadium. But the way that we started the season, it was a massive drop, and credit to Steve Parish and everyone that's involved for improving the atmosphere and bringing HF back. But yeah, something had to be done. The atmosphere has improved, but it's still not where I want it to be, because I know that we can do better than this. So next season with the singing section, it will be interesting. My vision for the singing section is that it grows out. So basically all blocks become a singing section in the future, because that's my goal. We're known for having the best atmosphere in the Premier League, and we should be the first ones, you know, to do something like that, have the whole block a singing section like the home style. That's my next vision. The atmosphere has improved, but as I said, when away fans were coming into our stadium and after 5 minutes singing, "Where's your famous atmosphere?" it really hurt me personally, because where has it gone? You can't really reply back to that. So yeah, but there's still room for improvement as well.
I want to add though, I'll tell you right now, you guys are so lucky. That's the one thing I miss about not being in England anymore, is I can see every Palace match on TV, but being at the matches is always my favorite thing. It's why I come back every few years to watch Palace play. And it really has improved. I know that, you know, historically our away support has been really good, so that's not really in question. But I have to admit, over here, the media, because a couple of the people that do the games over here happen to be Palace fans, they did spotlight on the fact that there was such a little atmosphere in the beginning of the year. And you can tell from West Ham, which was the most recent home match, I believe, yeah, that the atmosphere has gotten better. And then again, you know, the Doncaster away game and even yesterday's match, you know, it's been brilliant. And I think, again, people like to criticize Parish. I'm actually a pretty big supporter of his, and I know it's funny when people criticize him. We're in the best time we've ever had as a club, and I think people take that for granted. And again, like Diaz, only been a fan of the Premier League era. He's very lucky. I've been through a lot of downs in the few ups, and I'll say again, he's done a great job. And I, again, kudos to the fans, because again, it really does make a difference on TV, especially seeing how the fans react at the stadium.
All I would say is I'm not sure how much sort of respect for this I'd want to give Steve Parish. He's a businessman. He knows what's good for his club. And it's obvious that the HF are on every bit of promo that the club puts out. So it's sort of, if anything, I would say that it dragged on a bit too long. And, you know, it could have been resolved a lot quicker with the same outcome. Obviously, we've seen it happen in the cup games. Amazing atmosphere. We've been involved in it. Very, very much looking forward to next season, assuming that we go in the singing section. But it's the HF that deserve the credit for me. Steve Parish has just done what any business person would do. I'd do the same thing. I don't want to, you know, he's a great man, done great things for the club, but I think maybe he shouldn't get too much credit for this personally.
Yeah, so for me, I'm not massively concerned about giving kudos either way or anything really. For me, it's more about, you know, where we go from here. DR said it quite well. It's you know, that the I think next season people are going to be incredibly sort of shocked by how the level it goes up. You know, I know the guys in the HF are extremely excited about it. I really hope that the rest of the support get behind it. I know there's plenty of interesting people joining that singing section. And yeah, it's difficult, you know, and I think a lot of people have said it'd be better to do a full reset of the Lower Holmesdale. Well, you know, then it's, I think that's just a can of worms to open up, to be honest with you. But whatever happens, I think, again, I go back to, it was pretty clear we had to, as has been said, we had to do something to address the decline in atmosphere. Because DR is exactly right in what he says. Being able to hear the away support sing "Where's Your Famous Atmosphere," it hurt, because even if they tried to sing that before, you wouldn't have heard it. And the fact that you can hear it proves their point. And, you know, we, as I've said before on this show, we all took so much pride in the respect and the admiration we got as supporters. And we all like took a bit of credit for that. And we talked about how wonderful our fans were and all that sort of stuff. But when it came down to it, you know, we were all responsible for letting that slip. So long may the upturn continue. And, you know, I think, like I said, right direction right now.
I was listening to the Football Weekly show the other day, the Guardian show, and they were talking about the comparison between the UK crowds and German crowds and which one was better. And they said that the German crowds tend to have these kind of very much planned orchestral style fan base that will sing songs regardless of what's happening. So there'll be a kind of reflective thing over here. You know, somebody will say, "There's someone behind you, scream at you," and that won't come through at German crowds because they're still singing the same thing. And the HF have kind of got that. And you've got to remember that at the moment they've got whatever it is, 180 seats, 400 next year. It is going to be huge. It's going to feel like the kind of European ties that you watch on TV when, you know, the big four, the big six play. So it is exciting times, definitely.
Okay, that's great. Right, moving swiftly on, we're going to get into a bit of match chat now. Obviously, it was a 4-1 victory. I'd sum it up pretty much saying really poor first half, extremely. I was almost embarrassed to go in one up, and the nature of the goal was pretty funny as well. It was a better second half performance, and we'll talk about why that was in a little bit. I will say, you know, I think the end result did hide just quite how abject that first half was. And I was really pleased to see the players sort of en masse come out and say how poor they felt it was. I think Van Arnold said it on Twitter. A couple of the interviews after the game, I think Wilf and Luca both said they didn't feel it was acceptable. And, you know, Leicester will feel very hard done by, especially Claude Puel, now he's been sacked. So obviously very, very tough on them, but who cares? It's a good 3 points for us. And ultimately, it was a perfect way to win the game, to play on the counter-attack, to take our chances. That's the big thing. It's amazing to be that clinical. And again, away from home, be that clinical. 4 goals out of 5 shots on target, I think it was, which just flies in the face of what we've done in the past. Dale, you want to jump in before we move further?
Yeah, I think in the first half, it was pretty much Leicester opening us apart with the diagonal balls to the left-hand side and targeting Joe Ward. Joe Ward struggled against Barnes. He just couldn't handle his fast footwork. And another thing in the first half that changed in the second half was the fact that more players were showing themselves. In the first half, there was a massive separation between the midfield, the attack and the defence. Just players wasn't coming for the passes, and there were so many misplaced passes as a result. So in the second half, another thing that Roy changes is the fact that he told the players to actually comfortable. That was a mistake that he did in the start of the game, but credit to him for changing the part, and that pretty much changed the game, really.
Definitely. Let's talk about that, the change, really, at half-time. So we got a question in from Mr. Cabris Parrott, who says, can you discuss the tactical change made at half-time? And Mike, I know you wanted to talk about the fact that we were playing deep and then less deep, and whether that was the difference. And I think that's all tied into the same thing. So the tactical change at half-time, weirdly, was to actually drop Zaha and Townsend further back and have them effectively mark the fullbacks when Leicester were in possession. And it's weird because I remember in the first half I was tweeting, we've got to get some support up to Batshuayi, because he's, you know, we're punting the ball up long to him. And even if he does get hold of it, which he was doing a fair bit, there's just nothing for him. And when we were finding Zaha, there weren't enough people around him either. And Townsend was almost completely marked out of the game in the first half. So for me, it was about, I felt we needed to get players further forward. But weirdly, by dropping those two back, it completely re-enabled the counter-attack. And it gave the midfield a bit more ability to get on the ball and a few more options. And I think that relaxed the team as well, because all of a sudden, there were two or three or four options for a pass when they had the ball instead of one, you know, which tended to be either knock it back to the player who played it or lose it. And that's where we were first half.
Well, for all intents and purposes, it felt more like a 4-3-3 than other games. Zaha, Batshuayi and Townsend up front. And I felt like, because they were playing a 4-3-3 as well, and Tielemans and Maddison were doing exceptionally well. And as DR said, Maddison and Harvey Barnes were absolutely overrunning Joel Ward. And he didn't seem to have quite the cover from James McArthur that you usually expect. It seemed to me like Roy had decided that the best thing for it was for us to sort of decide that we'll have a few more men back, you know, flood the midfield a little bit more. And that worked very much in our favour. So I don't know whether we were playing further up or it was the fact that we had the extra man when we hadn't had in the first half. And he just maybe underestimated the standard of the middle three, the midfield three that they had. But it totally changed the game. And I'm not sure it made a great deal of difference how many people we had up top, because we were playing entirely counter-attacking football. So it worked a lot better whether there was one in front of the others or two, for that to happen, just because it meant that we could break out so much quicker than what we were doing in the first half.
Yeah, and just looking at the way Zaha played second half, in the first half, Ricardo was able to get down their right side a lot more. And I think I looked at the whoscored.com and I noticed that Zaha actually played a little bit higher and towards the middle in the second half, and he was much closer to Batshuayi. And I think that forced Ricardo to stop having to be able to, you know, get forward. And I think that was able, and as Mike just said, that really helped us on our counter-attack, because I would say all three of the goals were counter-attack driven. And because of the fact, again, because Zaha was pushed more further up the field, it really helped to link up with Batshuayi, who I thought, by the way, did a really good job of holding the ball up. A lot of times in the first half, you would see him get the ball and he didn't have any help. And I know once or twice he made a bad pass, but he does drop a lot deeper than even Benteke does or Ayew does. And he works really hard, you know, around that center midfield area as a striker. And I thought that really second half told when he, you know, started the counterattack for one of the goals. And his play is just in general yesterday was for a player who doesn't get the ball a lot, he really was very effective as a striker. And I think that's a very good thing looking forward for us, you know, as a team.
Yeah, I think in terms of Batshuayi, especially in the first half, he kind of struggled with the passes because, one, there wasn't that many options, and two, it wasn't really his day, I'll say, because there were some simple passes. I remember in the first half, Wilf was running on the left-hand side and he could have made it, but he took extra touches and just passed a bit too late. So he didn't have the greatest of games, but then also he was a bit isolated as well. I think in terms of getting Batshuayi more involved in the game, we have to play like we did in the second half from the get-go. Because like that, you get players like Wilf and Andros and like Batshuayi that kind of come back and collect the ball, and it works better because they're more involved rather than waiting for players to pass to them. So from now on, hopefully we play like that, like we did in the second half, and get them players more involved.
Okay, well, thank you very much, guys, for ruining the question that I picked for to discuss from the listeners later on. Much appreciated.
And on that,
we will be getting to plenty of your contact very shortly. Well, you'll see when we get to my question how much you've already talked about the things I was going to talk about. But before we sort of end our game related chat, I do want to quickly talk about the goals, because I think there's some interesting points of discussion in there. Obviously, the Batshuayi goal, really, I think there's two things to focus on there. One was Luca's pass and the movement of MacArthur to make that, because it was really the first bit of decent attacking play that we did in the entire of the first half. It was our first effort. And Luca has started to really do that this season, really to find some really good angles for passes. And he really drills the pass at MacArthur. And I think the fact that his touch pops it up was a bit lucky. And of course, the shot was probably going well wide, and certainly wouldn't have had too much post in it by the time it reached the goal. But fantastic striking instincts from Batshuayi. Yeah, it comes off of his knee, but there's a deliberate movement to it. And he was having a bit of a laugh on Twitter saying, oh, yeah, definitely meant that, and a sort of laughing, crying face. But, you know, it's an instinctive reaction. And I think, again, he's sort of showing the striker's instinct that a confident, direct striker has. And we've seen our strikers at the club, again, we've talked about it, whether you believe it's ability or not, or whether you believe it's form and confidence, you know, whatever that situation is, Batshuayi still is, you know, he's in a place where all he thinks about is scoring goals. And I really like to see that in a striker, and it's great to have confident forward play.
It's a really good point, Chris. And I'll harken back to when Benteke was doing well, when he scored those 17 goals, he had that confidence. Batshuayi is a confident player. That goal that he scored, I'm not sure how many strikers would have scored that goal, because, you know, I actually wrote down in my notes that I laughed when it went in, because I didn't know what part of his body came off of. But watching on replay, you know, myself, watch it now, it was a deliberate attempt by him, because MacArthur's shot was going well wide. So he just has something that, and I think it goes to the rest of the match when we had our conversion rate. You talked about four goals at seven shots on goal and four out of five on target. That's ridiculous. We've lamented the entire season how we don't convert our chances. Batshuayi was involved in the last, you know, on the Luca penalty when he took that shot and he hit the post, it went out, and then Schlupp gets tackled. He's really got some instincts about him, which we saw from his first match against Fulham when he made that great turn, that we haven't had in a long time. And I'll tell you right now, having a confident striker, I think it reverberates with the entire team, and that's what we saw yesterday.
Speaking of instincts, him being offside for the second one, or in an offside position, was absolutely key to us scoring it. And I was really impressed with that, because, you know, that was totally deliberate. That was planned. And that's nice to see, because you won't see that from IU, and you probably won't see it from Benteke. They're really impressed with his part in that goal.
You mentioned IU. Just look at, in terms of confidence and in strikers, just look at the goal that IU scored against Wolves. It seemed like he flipped the switch and started playing much better. So, yeah, it wasn't an easy goal that Batshuayi scored. It was a bit lucky, but yeah, as Chris said, it was, you know, great instincts. But hopefully, this will, you know, change him and give him more confidence.
Definitely, and you know, you mentioned the second goal, you know, Batshuayi being offside. The fact that the only thing that I could think about, to be completely honest with you, even though it's a really good finish from Wilf, and I've got to credit him for, you know, usually you think about Wilf trying to finish a chance, and what he tends to do is just put his foot through it, and sometimes it flies in the net and sometimes it doesn't. But it was a really controlled, powerful side foot volley, and that was great to see. And you could see the absolute joy on Hodgson's face. And I think Wilf actually mentioned it in his post-match interview. He talked about control of the finish, and that's clearly something he's worked on. And that's a big thing. If Wilf has been able to add that level of control, you know, they could get a fair few goals before the end of the season. I really do think that. But there was a huge contribution in the second goal from Batshuayi early on in the move, because he'd actually dropped into his own half, you know, really held the ball up well, saw off a couple of players, and he's the one who shifts the ball out wide first. And for him to be the furthest forward player when the ball came in from MacArthur, which, great ball, by the way. But all I can really honestly think about is if Zaha actually tucks that back across the 6-yard box. Batshuayi is onside because it's the next phase of play, has a tap in, and I'm £625 richer. So have a think about that, Wilf. Your mansion. That £625 would have meant something to me. Anyway, the penalty was clear for the third goal as well. Luka doesn't miss those. And again, that you mentioned the shot from Batshuayi from it. Fantastic, instinctive shot. That shot, the fact that he had it, that was his second shot on target, did win me £70. So I let you off there. And I think, you know, shame he didn't score it, because then again, I would have been richer as well. But yeah, great to see that penalty tucked away. And again, you mentioned Ayew early on, DR. It was all about him. The fourth goal where he made a great tackle on Maguire. Perfectly timed pass, and it's nice to see Wilf finish that one as well. Lovely little dip on the shot just before the keeper, so it means he doesn't save it. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant way to finish off the game. You know, very, very strong performance overall in the end. You know, you kind of think about the first half and the fact that Leicester were winning it after their equaliser. And I've got to be honest, as soon as they put that equaliser in, I was convinced they'd go on to win the game because of how we played first half. But, you know, it seems like a ridiculous thing to think when you've beaten the team 4-1.
I think we're now 5 games or 6 games unbeaten. And I don't know about you guys, but it doesn't really feel like it. And that's what I mean with Hodgson. He just gets a result. But like, we haven't played that brilliantly. We can still play much better, which is good to see, because we've got Brighton coming up. And I know it relates to my question, but we can even flip the switch even more. We're going to answer the listener question in a second, but that's another positive to look at.
On TalkSport the other night, they were saying, when I said that I thought that we'd undersold ourselves so far this season and we'd be absolutely fine and wouldn't go down. And the presenter was like, oh, well, that's you talking with your head rather than your heart. And I just thought, oh, fuck off. Like, just shut up. Like, and the Leicester game, that goal absolutely proved it. Like, he'll go back and he'll think about that, hopefully, and realise how wrong he was.
Right, as a special treat for you, is a new regular feature as well. I'm going to introduce you now to Chewy. That's Michael.
And hello. And
are you a Michael QL, or is it actually Chewel, and that's why you're called Chewy?
No, it's QL. Chewy's a whole Star Wars-related nickname.
Are you sort of giant and hairy? Is that what the situation is?
At times, yeah.
Good, glad to hear it.
Can't lie.
Anyway, you not only doing a wonderful job as a editing our the writing side of our website and writing some superb articles, you've also got a keen interest in the CPFC ladies team, who you've been following pretty closely this season. And well, obviously it was a highly publicised game played. Was this week, the weekend just gone, isn't it? I think. And Thursday night, yep. Players in attendance, lots of fans in attendance, building a bit of momentum. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got interested in the ladies team and what's been going on.
For myself personally, I've been wanting to sponsor a player for a while, not to self promote, but I've written a book and I wanted to sponsor a player with my book. But the men's side of things is a bit of a rip-off, I'm not going to lie. It's very expensive. And then I saw an article was run last summer about the ladies' team. Ironically, it was an inaccurate article claiming that we had no money, we were making the players have to pay for stuff, and which was a load of bull. But I saw on it that you could sponsor the ladies. So I contacted Paula Johnson, the club secretary, found out about costings and such, and took the plunge and signed up and sponsored a player.
You can self-promote. What's the book?
It's called The Lost King. It's a fantasy fiction book, medieval fantasy fiction. It's the first of 4, if I ever get them written.
All right. Okay, so, like, you know, new Game of Thrones, maybe?
Oh, well, you know, that'd be nice.
Well, it's finishing, isn't it? So but let's not turn this into Game of Thrones chat, although I've got some theories I'd like to share, but maybe that's for another time. So what's it like watching the ladies, for those who haven't done so?
Do you know what? Thoroughly enjoyable. I think we're all guilty of a bit of a mindset. We've all had it, you know, growing up between men's and women's football about the quality of it. But it's wrong, you know. I mean, the first game I went to was Leicester at home, the opening game of the new championship season. And I was hooked straight away, to be honest with you. it's great. It's great fun from what you see on the pitch to in the stands. For, you know, with a small number of us, the atmosphere that you generate is such good fun. I can't deny it, and I highly recommend that more people go down and experience it.
So I haven't gone down there myself, Chewy. So what I'm, you know, said the atmosphere is good. What ground do they tend to play at? Is it Bromley?
Yeah, all the home games are at Hayes Lane, Bromley. Which I don't know if any of you have been down there, but you've got one small stand at the moment. They are building a new one at one end. There's one small kind of seated stand where you've got the boxes and all that as well, where the players come out of. And then the rest of it's terrace.
The big question I've got is, are you allowed to drink your beer in view of the pitch?
Yes.
There you go. I'm selling it already.
Whether officially you're allowed to or not, I don't know, but I've seen enough people doing it.
All right, there you go. Huge positive. Mike?
I'm sold. Talk us through how they lost 3-0 against Lewis.
Right. I have to say, it's probably a game typical of the season that they're having. And some of what I'm going to say is probably going to sound very familiar to the men's this season as well. I think, as I mentioned earlier, it was quite publicised. They've got a good crowd down there for it, say a couple of players. Whether the occasion of that perhaps got to them at the start, I don't know. But we started okay, to be honest with you, moving the ball around. And then about 10 minutes in, Ashley Hinks, one of our strikers, committed a silly foul really in the box, a typical probably like striker's foul, to be honest with you, to give away a penalty. And that put Lewis 1-0 up. And then we kind of huffed and puffed the rest of the half, but found it difficult to get much going. Had a couple of half chances. And Nikita, one of our other strikers, there's a shout for her being fouled in the box, which the referee gave nothing. I was watching it online. I couldn't make it down on the day, but on the replay, it looked like it could possibly have been a penalty. That's where you kind of miss all the super angles you get now with Sky and such. But second half, we came out all over them. Whatever was said at half time by Dean Davenport, the manager, was working. It was all us. It just wasn't going in the back of the net. It's been a problem we've had all season, really. We just not taking the chances when they came along. We then made two subs, and I think in the process of those players coming on, we just lost the concentration because in seconds they found a way through and scored a beautiful goal, to be honest with you, to make it 2-0, when it just knocked the stuffing out of us. And then later on, they got a second penalty, tucked away 3-0. And even then, though, we didn't stop. I mean, Nikita, again, looked like she was fouled in the box, nothing given. And we had a couple of chances, kept going up until the end of the final whistle, but just could not put it in the back of the net. And as I say, that probably kind of sums up our season, really. Dodgy referee decisions, we've had loads of those, absolutely tons of them. Not taking our chances, and then individual errors that have kind of been costing us. It's just frustrating because it came against a team we were level with on points, ahead on goal difference, and we could have really kicked up another place in the table, and instead we're looking over our shoulder again a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed there's been a really big push on the club side in general to kind of promote the women's game, which has been great. I've noticed a lot of the social media stuff promoting them, etc. What do you think, like, the club's plans are going future with the assisting women's team?
I think to push it as hard as they can. I think, you know, Steve Parrish, we all have our moans about him at times in certain ways he does things, but like us, he's a Palace fan, and I think the impression I get is he wants to see us succeed on every level. And so the aim would be, you know, we're in the Championship, it's the second tier. There is that caveat of the Women's Super League, which I think we'll be desperate to get to. This season, it just was never going to be possible. Because they reformatted it, everyone had to apply to get into this league. We had a great case for it. Should have got in originally, didn't, because Man United paid tons of money to reform a team and took our place, effectively. And then we got in it 3 weeks before the season started, when we had lost all our key players, had been preparing for a league below. So we started off on the back foot. And then we've got a budget, probably of a few hundred thousand, if anything, as part-time team, and United have got a £5 million budget and are full-time. It's kind of a big gulf. But I think hopefully United will move up, next season, I think we can prepare, as long as we stay up, of course, we can prepare for being at this level. And I think we're going to give it a go. I really think that the aim will be to keep putting in what we can, keep trying to raise the identity of the women's side of it and really push them up, try and get them into that top league.
Actually, how exactly does it work then, getting promoted to the elite division? Is it like you apply for it, or is it just normal promotional and relegation, like how it is with the men's?
No, it's at the moment, it's a bit complicated. Kind of like when you drop down into non-league with men's at times, where it's not quite as straightforward as just, oh, we finish top, we go up. To be in the Super League, the top league, you've got to be full-time, of which we aren't at the moment. So, like, for example, Ashley Hinks, who we signed in the summer, she's already said in an interview, if we went up, she wouldn't be able to play anymore because with her job and everything, she couldn't go full-time. So you've got to, A, finish those positions, and then B, I think it's like based on like finances and structure and everything. Because it's the same with the relegation side of it. No one's 100% sure whether someone gets relegated this season from the Championship, or if they don't. There's talk of maybe one team goes down and two come up, because at the moment it's an uneven 11-team league and they want to make it 12. But even then, teams come up into the Championship have to meet certain criteria to qualify for it. So, unfortunately, it's not quite as clear-cut as we'd love it to be. I think for someone like United, if they finish top, they go up. And I imagine the same for Spurs. But as I say, as long as next season, I think if we're in a position where we can go full time, then if we got into a promotion spot, I'm sure we'd be able to go up, no problem.
Yeah, it sounds to me like, you know, obviously the more backing that the ladies' club get from the fans as well, the more attention it gets, the easier it will be to finance something like that. So I think it's important that the fans hear that and play a part as well. So we're going to leave it there, Chewy, for this week, but we'll be checking in with you regularly throughout the course of the season. So thank you very much for sharing, and we'll speak to you soon.
Back of the Nest, Match Review Podcast.
Okay, it's time for your listener contacts. And we've all chosen some of our favourites. Thanks to everyone else who got in touch. We read them all. We appreciate them all. They do help us shape what we're doing, so keep it all coming. But I've chosen a tweet from Kevin T. And he said, Batshuayi over Benteke, then Ayew over Benteke. Does this give a signal? And also meant to mention in that Palace Ash said, did you see Benteke fail to even score a high five this weekend? Very awkward moment with Benteke on the bench, trying to go for a little bit of a high five slash handshake with Koyate as he's stripping to get on the pitch. And he has to kind of give up. But it was an awkwardly locked time before he gave up as well.
I missed this.
It felt like about 40 minutes, but it's probably about 15, 20 seconds at least, where he just held his hand out and you could just see his arm slowly sort of dropping as he kind of thought, well, this isn't going to happen, isn't it? He's not looking at me.
We've all felt that pain. We've all felt that pain at some
point. I think the cameraman actually noticed that, and like purposely they didn't just switch it. They're just waiting to see how long he's going to go in for, because he just, like, we saw Kuyate getting ready to come on, but it's like, all right, move on. It didn't move on. It felt like ages.
See, he's too polite there. If that ever happens to me, I would just shout. After about 3 or 4 seconds, I'll go, oi, got my hand out here. Doesn't usually get your hand shaken. You usually get some sort of other gesture as a result of that, but at least it's a reaction. But there you go. Very, very funny moments to watch. The question, we've pretty much talked about Batshuayi and how well he played. I think it does give a signal to a degree, and I think it should. You know, Benteke still, you know, he was out a long time, you know, and there's still a lot of rust to shake off, but there's also a year's worth of poor form to shake off as well. It's better for him that he has that level of player ahead of him, because he now knows where he needs to raise his game to. And look, there'll be plenty of opportunity for him to play. And look, I couldn't think anything else in that first half other than it would be much better to have had Benteke up front to kind of to be more of a physical presence. And I kept thinking, what if we could somehow fit in Benteke and Batshuayi alongside each other, and somehow fit in Max Meyer as well, and all those kinds of things. I think Benteke offers an awful lot in terms of holding the ball up, link up play, and if you get proper crosses in, which we so rarely seem to do when he's playing, he is a real threat in the box. But hey, he's not been in good form for a while. He's been out injured a long time. Batshuayi is confident, he's direct, and he's having a real impact when he's been playing. So he has the shirt, and rightly so.
Okay, so I'm going to go for a comment from Neil Koska. Thank you, Neil. Does anyone else think there's a real tonking coming from Palace? Imagine if we fired on all engines. And then he's put... the one thing I'd say, Neil, engines, and then you've put an apostrophe S. Engine, apostrophe S. There's no need for that, but fair enough. Imagine if we fired on all engines. I'm hoping Brighton will be the recipients. I would say that we kind of fired on all engines in that game, really, considering that we scored almost every shot we took. But I'm guessing you're referring to sort of the games where we're sort of shooting 30 times. If you have a listen to Tompkins after the game, Zaha after the game, as Chris has alluded to, they both talked about the fact that this season we've failed to capitalise on chances. So it's obviously something that's at the forefront of the minds of the players. So I do expect it will come, and it might not be, you know, a massive sort of 5-0 win, but it might just be a result over one of the big boys that we've still got to play. But I feel like, you know, against Liverpool and certainly against Man City, that's already come. So I think it's more just a case of it happening again, really, to be honest.
I think that's my point earlier on, is just the fact that, yes, we are 5 games unbeaten, but we haven't particularly like played that great. And I think we've got it in our locker to have a game like we did against Leicester last season at home, where we just played fantastically going forward, great passes. And I don't know if it will happen against Brighton, because I'm not I can't read the future, but I can see another game just like Leicester at home last season happening soon.
But no, on the subject, I totally get what Neil's saying. And I think whether it will happen or not, you kind of have to have that perfect storm, don't you, of a consistently great performance, and you take your chances. And but, you know, when you consider in some of the games when we've created clear-cut chances in the sort of, you know, 8-9 sort of area, if we are as clinical as we were against Leicester, we could absolutely thump someone. You know, we've got a game coming up not too long in the future against Huddersfield, who might already be down and, you know, might be really, really struggling at that moment, where you could imagine that if we're absolutely on form, we could do something like City tend to do and totally overrun a team. But it's very important, I think, you know, we can think about that sort of stuff, but I very much doubt Roy would let the players get carried away and start thinking like that. I think the way we play first and foremost is to keep our shape and to keep our system and you know, negate the threat on the other team before we start doing too much ourselves. And, you know, that's been getting us results of late. So, you know, I hope we will very much do that to Brighton, but I will settle for any kind of a win after losing to 10 men earlier on at their place. Dio, your question up.
Yes, my question is from Rob Leonard, and he asks, was that Andros's worst game this season? I don't know if it was his worst game of the season. Andros has been pretty consistent. He's been one of our better players this season. You can look at it two ways, though. Did he just have a poor game? Because every player, even the greatest, that, you know, they have that one odd game. Or did he miss Wan-Bissaka? I honestly think that he missed Wan-Bissaka this game, because their combination going forward helps Andros out a lot. Yesterday, especially in the first half, when Andros was getting double teamed, normally you have Wan-Bissaka there to like get him out of trouble, or another midfielder. But Wan-Bissaka wasn't there, and Joel Ward wasn't as effective going forward. And I feel like that contributed to how Andros played yesterday. It was just a case of, you know, missing Wan-Bissaka's presence going forward, because them two are brilliant together. And, you know, you saw that yesterday. You saw how much of a miss it was.
I can't get over you using that double teamed in that particular scenario. ignoring that, I think what that underlines, because Andros was playing more in the 4-3-3 mode, so he wasn't so much playing as a midfielder, it underlines how difficult it is for the strikers, because you can be out of the game for a lot longer. And I don't feel like Townsend had a poor game. I just think there was periods where he was further away from play. You know, there was less effect from him on the game. And that's more a result of the formation that we started with than anything else. You know, just Sahar has that problem a lot of games where there's maybe whole halves, he does nothing. But you know he's going to have those couple of minutes like he did, you know, Leicester. The first half he was virtually anonymous and then, you know, ends up netting two. If you're going to play that formation, then that's what's going to happen to Townsend. So I'm not sure we can blame him per se for having a fairly quiet game. And I think that's all it was, really, a quiet game rather than a poor game.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's not many players that could say they had a good first half. And again, as we talked about earlier, the change for the second half involved making Andros do a much more defensive job by sticking with the fullback. And that's not necessarily something that Andros enjoys, but clearly it was effective because, you know, we went on to win the game at a canter. So I don't know. I you know, maybe we all see different things when we watch games. And if you were sort of player watching a little bit on Andros, you might be critical of him. I didn't notice him having a poor game, but that's maybe what Mike's saying as well, where I just didn't notice him. I just think he was exceptionally quiet. All right, Patrick, your question up last.
My question is from Cy at Sabre74 on Twitter. It is, if Leicester go down, should we look at Barnes? Kid looks a prospect. First, Cy, thanks for the question. Like many, I thought he played really well. Harvey Barnes is a 21-year-old kid from the Leicester Academy. He was on loan, actually, in Championship for West Brom beginning this year. They called him back, and now he's starting to play. And I think he's a very good player. He's in the under-19, I believe, or under-21 England side. My only thing is I don't think that's a Palace thing to do. In the past, we've looked at players like Ademola Lookman at Everton and Nathan Redmond at Norwich at the time, went to Southampton. And we end up, those players end up going to other teams. So I don't think we'd look at him. Secondly, I don't think Leicester's going down. I think that Huddersfield and Fulham are already down. And I think the third team come from maybe a Cardiff or hopefully Brighton. But I don't see them going down. So I don't think he's a player we'd even look at. And they wouldn't look to sell. I don't see why they'd sell a player from the academy. But if he goes somewhere, I think he'd go to a fortunate Everton or I think somebody else up top there, maybe even Tottenham. But he's a very good player and I like him a lot, but I don't think he's a Palace prospect. I wish he was.
I will say that I was extremely, extremely impressed with him. I think that's probably the first sort of 90 minutes he got taken off bizarrely by Claude Puel. But I was very, very impressed with him all game. You know, very confident direct runner, very, very strong. You know, you can't have too many players in your side who are that comfortable on the ball. He seemed very two-footed to me, puts a lovely cross in. So I would completely agree with Si that I would love us to target a player of that quality. I say this, and it's difficult always comparing players to well-known players, but there was something about Rooney with him, if you know what I mean, and the way he's built and the way he runs. Obviously, Rooney was a success from a very young age. He was, you know, 16. He was playing first-team football, whereas, you know, at top level, Barnes has only just broken in at 21. So, you know, it's not a direct comparison, but, you know, it's a style thing. I think he could play centrally, and I think he could, you know, potentially lead a line at times as well. He looks a really, really good player.
I think he is a good player, but then again, I think Wardy made him look better than he is. So I don't know. I'll have to see a bit more from him before, you know, whether I decide if I want him at Palace or not.
All right. Well, it's good because we know obviously you get the final say on these things, DR. And
needs your
rubber stamp on that contract before anything happens.
Yeah, that's why, you know, I wasn't involved with Yak and Rakip. That's why I was frustrated. Like 2 weeks ago on the pod.
Mikey's now put an image, I think, that came from one of the tweets of it's the Guaita picture with Tompkins peering down his shorts adjacent to a poster for the inability to get or sustain an erection. And the two things look very, very similar. And that is also very funny. So check out social media for that one too. Okay, look, we'll leave it there. Like I say, we had so much more contact, and apologies for not being able to use it all on the show, but it is hugely, hugely appreciated and important. So thank you for all of that. Cheers for listening. Thank you to my panel, Mikey, for producing. Subscribe, stuff like that. You know, we got three shows a week, so if you subscribe, you get them all.
Five star.
All right, yeah. If you feel like it, even if you don't feel like it, go to your chosen podcast app and rate us 5 stars. Fair few, you've been doing that. It really does help spread the word about the show. We seem to be picking up a fair few listeners, which is really appealing. So tell your friends as well. Dio, you've got your hand up. What do you want?
Yeah, just a reminder that on Love Sport, we'll answer all the questions that were unanswered today. So no worries.
Oh, there you go. So that show's live on Love Sport Radio. You can get that online or tune in via DAB if you're in the right area. We'll obviously be reviewing the Man United game, bullying Jake about the fact we thrashed his beloved Leicester. That's on Tuesday, 7 to 9pm live, and a podcast will be out shortly afterwards. The preview show will be reviewing the Man United game and also looking ahead to the Burnley match later in the week as well. So thanks very much, everyone. See you later. Bye.
Man's out here working.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.